The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
Kerry Howard. Kerry, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the program. Can you talk about what training they currently receive, frontline workers, and potentially how could that be improved?
I think it's more that most, you know, police, fire, ambulance, and even going back to defence, they train people in lots of physical kind of elements of their work. They're required to go through a physical examination to even, you know, pass and become part of the training program. But there's a basic psychological assessment, but there's no kind of provision of information about, well, how do we maintain mental fitness? What does it look like if we're mentally unfit? And then what do we do about that? And it's a really big problem.
Mental fitness is a big problem because that's what keeps people turning up to work. And I suppose you don't realise that someone may be struggling until it's too late.
No, that's right. And in fact, one of the biggest costs to both the economy and small business, last year, this was pre-COVID, the impact of mental health was to the tune of $60 billion, and about $13 billion of that was to small business. And the issue is actually presenteeism, not absenteeism. So they turn up to work, the lights are on, but nobody's home. They're not actually being very effective or productive.
So what does this training look like? How long does it go for, and how is it actually delivered?
Sorry, that dropped out a minute.
Just this training, what does it actually look like in terms of, is it someone sitting in a classroom for 3 weeks before they start the job? Is it regular tune-ups? Is it online seminars? How does the training actually get delivered? And I suppose, what sort of time commitment would be required?
So we do bespoke sort of stuff depending on the industry. So it's often, there's multiple layers of approach that we would need to put in, much the same as somebody who engages in a health and wellness program for their physical body isn't just going to turn up to a 12-week program and then that's the end of it and then they're, you know, physically fit for the rest of their life. There's an ongoing maintenance requirement. And I think one of the things that we've learned through COVID is that lots of areas are actually sort of struggling with understanding the impact on their mental health and then how to help themselves come out of it. When I wrote my new book, The Trouble with Trauma, and I released it late last year, it was because we need more people to understand how to help themselves and what things they can do to do that. So in an organisation like a police, for example, we might add some training program into their initial police academy training that's not just about awareness raising around mental health, but what are the signs that we need to look for, like poor sleep, or are you, you know, angry? Do you find that your alcohol intake has increased? If that's the case, you know, what are the alternatives? What can you do about that?
And is part of it encouraging people to seek help and the best ways that they can actually go about doing that? Because I think people probably put off seeking help when they are experiencing some of these concerns that you're flagging, but perhaps early intervention would have been better than someone having a breakdown or a serious incident.
Oh, absolutely. But one of the biggest predictors of help-seeking behaviour is about whether people believe that it's got something to do with how their brain is functioning or their brain chemistry, as opposed to them just being, you know, slack or hopeless or useless or listening to too much dark music in the bedroom. And that's a really big shift in terms of how we have to let the messaging show what you can do to help, but also the awareness of the physiological changes that happen in the body and using those as markers that maybe, even though we may not be consciously aware of it, that there is actually another problem underlying, you know, all of these different things. And we use a lot of wearable devices these days that really easily give us a lot of data about what's actually physically going on in our bodies. And they're also indicators of how our mental health is travelling.
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually. I know someone that's got a ring that they wear and it tells them about how they sleep, and other people wear watches. So there's now more and more data coming through, particularly around sleep, which is quite important, as you've alluded to, I'm guessing, for mental health.
Yes, because sleep's actually one of the early indicators that there's a problem. So we talk about two different types of sleep cycles. So one of the things that would indicate a depressive sleep cycle is that people are often waking up multiple times overnight just to roll over and go back to sleep.
Mm.
So it might be every sleep cycle about 90 minutes or so. If they notice that they're waking up a lot during the night and rolling over and going straight back to sleep, that's usually an indication of low mood or their serotonin levels have dropped. And on the flip side of that is the 3 a.m. wake up where you're laying there awake for an hour and a half because your brain's thinking about all of this stuff that you've got to do and you haven't found an answer. And that's the anxiety sleep cycle. So understanding even just those two simple things about sleep can really then help somebody understand whether or not what they've got an issue with in their mental health is a fear of the future or whether or not they're, you know, regretting too many things in their past.
Thought-provoking stuff. What would it take, I suppose, to get this idea off the ground and to get this training more extensively implemented?
I think it requires that we make a focus sort of on putting basic level of training in with all of the basic training and then making mental health an element of all of the ongoing training programs that we do for our frontline services. But this also has big flow-on effects for the resources industry. So just as an example, I'm doing some work at the moment with the mining and the oil and gas areas because people from defence who leave defence and then a lot of them end up going and working in the resources sector. A lot of them leave defence because maybe they've got some mental health stuff that doesn't get addressed, and then they go and work in the mining sector. And we know that the mining sector, particularly in the FIFO or the DIDO areas, really struggle with their mental health. There's a lot of stuff that causes big issues, but a lot of it's the lack of awareness of what they're taking into those roles when they come from one of the services areas and then go and work in the resources sector.
Well, thank you very much for being on the program. This is an interesting idea, and hopefully it is something that is followed through. But I think you've even given people to think about if they are experiencing some of those warning signs that you flagged.
Yeah, because I think they're really simple things that we can do, and it's just a matter of getting that conversation going and having more people raising more awareness about the things to look for.
Good on you. Thank you very much. Kerry Howard there, psychologist and trauma prevention expert.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.